Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Welcome to Air Temple Island, your new home.
Who do you think you are?
Got an idea about who I am now, chumps?
I'm the Avatar. You gotta deal with it.
You're the Avatar, and I'm an idiot.
She's the perfect messenger to tell the city of my power.
This mucko's got moxie.
Name's Bolin, by the way. Bolin's got some moves, huh?
I will make no such promises.
I once bested a man with my trusty boomerang who was able to firebend with his mind.
The morning is evil.
We shall meet again soon, beautiful woman.
I've been dying to ask you, what happened to Zuko's mom?
It is time for you to be equalized.
What?
Solution.
I can't wait to get started. Yes! Finally!
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra podcast for DongBuFang.net. If you want extensive in-depth discussion on Korra from longtime knowledgeable fans of Avatar and longtime fandom members, then this is the podcast for you. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by mini-host, Delaney.
Hi, forgot to... Sorry.
Colin.
Hello.
Haley.
Hello.
Derek.
Hello.
And Sarah.
Hi.
Yes, a lot of people today. I'll try to say people's names so you guys can keep them straight. This is a minicast where we discuss a single Avatar Korra topic for a brief period of time. Today we'll be discussing Aang versus Korra. Basically differences between them, I think. And how those differences affect the two, specifically Korra. This topic comes from Delaney. So I guess if you want to give it a... was that a good introduction, or do you have a little bit more specific things to introduce it, Delaney?
Well, not necessarily like Aang versus Korra, but just, like, kind of sounds like, you know, we're, like, judging...
Who would win?
Because we know who'd win, but...
Aang versus Korra.
Because Aang would win, definitely. And if you disagree, I'm sorry, you're wrong. But but just comparing them, really, like, I mean, that's just the big thing I was wanted to point out, is I'm not going to be like, Aang is so much better than Korra, which he is, but that's not the point of this.
Comparing the two
avatars. I would
avatars,
have to disagree.
Comparing the traits, comparing why they're like the way they are, just that kind of thing. And it's interesting because, as Mike and Brian have said a lot of times in interviews, they wanted one of the things they want to do is create an avatar who's the opposite of Aang for Korra, which they've definitely done with Korra. Korra's traits being very starkly different. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering. I'd love to find this out, but I'm wondering if when they decided to make Korra the opposite of Aang, whether the first thing they said was, "Okay, well, she'll be a girl," and then went from there.
Yeah, I think they wanted the girl thing first. I think this is what they said, and then they figured out what else should be like. Oh, she'll be the opposite of Aang.
And they're also used to doing like a girl kind of, because Katara, you could say Aang's the main character, but really Katara is the one we see the story through.
To a certain extent, yeah. But, that obviously a huge, very, very large female presence on Avatar. So it's not like this was something new for them. It's like, there's not much difference writing the Korra from a girl's perspective. Because it's like, it's not like Korra's like this girly girl figure anyway.
She's not like Ty Lee, it's not that.
Yeah, so it's really probably not big difference, and it's not like Aang's this like manly man, so probably either one could be written either way, honestly.
Well, yeah, when you think about it from that perspective, actually, you've got Aang, who's a pretty skinny kid. I mean, he fills out later, as we see in the Korra flashbacks, but from the starting point, you see Aang is a pretty skinny kid, not the manliest in appearance, and then Korra, who is actually pretty buff. I mean, overall, I mean, it's not exaggerated, but it is very much, she has some pretty good arms on her, basically.
She's kind of manic.
Go ahead, Colin.
I just ended the conversation there. I think I have discussed about, there was a picture, we were talking about how she looks like a man. She does,
Colin?
But that's not the point. But please continue, Colin, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Just the whole thing, like how Korra's stronger than Aang. Well, Aang is like, what, 5 years younger than Korra?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know any, like, 12-year-old kid who's, like, super buff, but...
Well, there was that one kid in the news a few years ago.
So, that was child abuse. Let's not even talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
So I think the age thing is a big difference here, because it not only accounts for maybe physical differences, but also should be taken into account when we discuss maturity levels. And I know, Haley, do you have something to say on maturity levels between the two?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Maturity stuff on Aang and Korra.
Oh, yeah.
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 Okay, I'll make the point then. I think this is probably what you mean. Korra is very, like, hot-headed, and it seems like Aang is more mature despite being younger, which is interesting, and we'll talk about why about in a minute, but Korra, not very patient, not doesn't have the characteristics you'd associate with maturity, whereas Aang, despite being 12, well, has a lot of those, but at the same time, he still maybe doesn't have all of them, I guess.
It's like the Avatar wisdom just didn't kick in yet for Korra. It's like it's getting there, but... Yeah.
But, I mean, it's interesting. A lot of the things we associate with, like, the Avatar wisdom...
Yeah, that is a...
Is from, like, the Air Gnome.
Yeah, well, that culture. Is a pretty... The whole Avatar wisdom isn't there yet. It is a pretty major theme for Korra throughout...
Yeah, and like I was saying, I think it's a lot about the Air Nomad culture. She hasn't had lessons on airbending, hasn't had Tenzin's mentorship yet. And once that starts coming into play, you get to see her acting more mature, which it's interesting. I wonder how much of this air Avatar philosophy is just Air Nomad philosophy, because we don't really know, and we probably wouldn't know unless we got a non-Air Nomad Avatar who's being tutored by, like, a non-Air Nomad previous Avatar.
Yeah, well, from the different Avatars that we've seen, especially in the finale of Last Airbender, where we kind of got to see a few of the other Avatars, what their philosophies were, it's kind of like the idea that I get from that is that there really was no Avatar philosophy. It was just the Avatar spirit gave you the power to keep balance, but beyond that, a lot of how you behaved as the Avatar was left up to your personal discretion. So that's why you get very different Avatars in the way they behave towards the world.
I have to remember that it's being built up also. I would say like what you were saying would be more of like the first like three Avatars maybe, but then you have this kind of like built like this just built up store of knowledge. Which probably is probably another thing talking about the Air Nomad versus Avatar philosophy. Well, the Avatar is everything incarnate, the planet incarnate, the cultures, the elements, the world. And so I would say that you could say, well, that you really could go either way, saying, because it's not wrong, because it's the same thing, Air Nomad and Avatar philosophy, because the Avatar has been an Air Nomad several times. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, we don't really have much evidence from the show, I don't think.
Yeah,
the spirituality's just out the window.
Yeah, I think, honestly, though, going back to the finale again, a lot of the Avatar philosophy actually seemed kind of bloodthirsty. You know, how every single one of Aang's past lives were saying, you need to kill Ozai so to save the world, kind of thing. So I know most of us, we consider the Avatar a peaceful being, but I think a lot of that is definitely just the Air Nomad culture, because all the other Avatars were advocating that the ending of Ozai's life.
That goes back
to... Go ahead.
Well, just gonna say how it goes back to how he disrupted the Avatar cycle. He was trying to end the Avatar. If I was the Avatar spirit, I'd be pretty ticked off if he was trying to end me and just destroyed all these people. I'd be very ticked off. And I wanted Ozai to die.
Aang's just a
special, amazing person. So, but
that is a pretty good point. Yeah, I'm actually kind of wondering, it would be interesting to see a sort of what the show would have been like if Korra took Aang's place in Last Airbender. So just see how she would react to, say, for example, her entire people being destroyed, and how she would address the problem.
Well, this is a good transition into why they are the way they are. And also, we could have psychology arguments about genetics versus upbringing here. Mm-hmm. But really, Cora probably wouldn't. It's an irrelevant question because Cora wouldn't be the way she was if she was in Aang's situation. I would think
because she's shaped by Aang's legacy. That's my big thing talking about how it changed her, like her unique struggles, like why Cora is so different from Aang. It's because, you could kind of say Cora would maybe, she probably would, okay, she wouldn't do the exact same thing Aang would do, but she'd probably do very similar things, because the Avatar makes mistakes, but they tend to act always in the right. But, like, because that's the big thing with Cora, is that the entire time we watch her, she's struggling and struggling with her identity, which really Aang didn't struggle with. He struggled with, like, for, like, 4 episodes until, because he was the last airbender, but then we go, but with Korra, it was just because there's tons of waterbenders, and then and then just having to live up to Aang, who could arguably be called, well, of course, from our perspective, he is, because we don't know any others, but I'm the greatest Avatar ever.
Interesting. I think probably Korra's shaped. Well, first of all, I think Korra accepts being the Avatar. Kind of right away. Aang's really struggles with that.
There's no refusal of the call, like you guys talked about in the hero's journey.
Yeah, and the reason for her not struggling with that is because that's just what she's been her entire life. And I think really when you point to why Korra acts the way she is, you have to point to her isolated upbringing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of it, and also there is the fact that she's known she's the Avatar since she was a little girl, just because she was so, from what I've gathered from it, was that she's just so physically powerful as a bender that she knew she was the Avatar from so young, so she was able, there was no moment where suddenly, oh, by the way, you're the Avatar, it's something she's known all her life.
There was no struggle with, because I did say Korra did struggle with her identity, but she never struggled with her identity as the Avatar. Because Aang definitely struggled with being the Avatar, if that makes any sense. Because Korra does struggle as the Avatar, but not with being the Avatar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
except that all this burden and stuff.
Yeah, she seems to struggle most as the Avatar as a spiritual being that Aang excelled at, while the Avatar as a bender she excels at the most.
Okay, I got what you mean more now, Delaney. With the spiritual side, that's what Korra struggles with. I think a lot of the reason Korra has these, or the reason Aang is so not having any spiritual problems or any moral problems is because of his strong upbringing, like, as a monk.
Yeah.
He was taught this one singular philosophy his entire life, and like, while he may struggle with accepting being the Avatar, because that's not something he grew up with his entire life, that's something he's suddenly told, he's very confident in what he believes to be right and how he should conduct business. And then Korra is not given this monastic upbringing and is going to react the way, in Avatar situations, the way she was brought up, to maybe fight more. She wasn't necessarily told not to, not to knock Tarlok down once he's helpless in the episode 8. It's not necessarily that's more of a less of an Avatar reaction. That's just more of Korra's reaction. I don't necessarily think either one is maybe an Avatar or not an Avatar reaction to that situation.
I think with the difference in upbringing is Korra was still sort of raised in a monastic setting. I mean, she could still visit her family, I assume, but there was very much a sense of she's in the compound and she doesn't really leave except on special occasions or if she can convince the guy to let her out. The difference being that Aang was raised in a monastic setting to be a monk, while Korra was raised in a somewhat similar setting to be the Avatar.
Well, there's like 5 people in that compound. There's like Katara and a bunch of Lotus Guards, and okay, guys, you can freak out and y'all howl and their connection, but that's not, there's no foundation for that. And she just went out into the Arctic and was like, I'm just going to wander around with my polar bear dog. And unlike Aang, where we can see in his flashbacks that there's just so many, that's another thing talking about how Korra is so terrible at social interaction because she doesn't. There's never anyone around her age.
Yeah, Korra.
Go ahead.
No, you finish.
I just brought back that what I wanted to say was that we never really saw any sort of attempt before, because, okay, well, really, we only saw, like, the first two episodes, any indication of it with Korra training. Like, it just seemed they were just, like, element after element after element, and, oh, you're going to learn airbending, so we're just going to throw spirituality at you right now. So, like, because I thought that was another thing influencing her lack of spirituality is because they just bundled it with airbending, it looked like, and they didn't really, like, include the ideology and, like, the ideas of the Avatar until they're like, oh, we're just going to ship you off to Tenzin now so we don't have to deal with this. So,
yeah, it definitely seems that if they wanted her to learn airbending, they probably should have started way earlier.
No, it's the cycle, though. Like, it takes years to practice, like, the master waterbending. It takes years to master, like, certain elements.
Oh, true.
So, yeah, there's a point earlier. Definitely Korra's isolated upbringing is one of the major things in her thing. But it's not that she was raised in a similar setting to Aang, maybe in the fact that they're isolated from the rest of the world, kind of, but just there's no really moral foundation for Korra. Not necessarily no moral foundation, no monastic moral foundation, like Aang had, and just it's not like either one's right or wrong, but she just didn't have this non-violence thing pounded into her head.
And the humility as well, because she was, because you know how Aang just couldn't bow. Okay, now I'm talking about the wrong thing. I'm not even going to bring that up. Pardon my slip. When Aang goes, Aang couldn't handle that pressure, you know, about being the Avatar and escaping, and then how Korra just all her life she's known White Lotus guards and everyone just being so, you know, she's the Avatar and, you know, just kind of having that mentality of, she's just not humble at all because, I mean, she's isolated. She gets everything she wants. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What really made my point was what I was going to say, and then I realized I'd get attacked if I said that, so I'm not going to say it.
I think also going back to that she just never had that non-violence upbringing, I don't think it's true. I think it's that, like, Aang was just a gentle person and didn't like to hurt people. Like, I mean, even, like, in the finale, Avatar Yang Chen was like, you gotta kill Ozai, and she was brought up by the same, like, upbringing. So,
interesting point. I would say that would be the only counter to my statement. Yeah, Yang Chen. Okay, I still think that that's a good point. I still would stay with my statement, though. Because there's really no evidence Korra had a non-violent upbringing, though.
Well, all she did, what we saw was all her sparring and stuff. It didn't seem like she had any. And when we see it in Republic City, she immediately just starts attacking people.
Yeah.
Aang would have been like, okay, we're going to sit here and try and talk about this for 5 minutes. But nope, Korra, I'm just going to jump in here and attack everyone with everything I have.
Yeah, and they tried to make Korra so much the opposite of Aang that they had somewhat ridiculous things like that, and then they justify it through this perceived background of Korra, which we'd barely see any of.
It's two episodes.
So it's
three if you count the last episode.
Yeah, and it's pretty frustrating, I would say. Because Korra, I don't know, compared to Aang, Korra just seems like so unrelatable. At the same time, I know a lot of people relate to her, so.
Well, it's her superficial, we had like, what was it, 10, 12, 11
episodes?
Yeah, 12 episodes. And we know that Avatar was a character-driven show, and then Korra is a plot-driven show, and so their characters just seem really shallow. Well, not shallow, superficial, just in their, not character.
They aren't
exactly
in depth.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's some character there.
Yeah, so there's a lot of inherent differences in the shows, too, as to why maybe we don't get the background and such.
Maybe next season, whatever it is.
Maybe not. So we have the personality differences. It's a lot of the Korra struggling with spirituality. It's kind of, I think, Delaney, you mentioned, it's kind of, 'cause spirituality is kind of just dumped in with airbending. And because we don't really know what, like, the spirituality even means on its own. So, like, why is she having problems with this? Is it because she has no airbending? is because Aang was raised as a monk and meditated. Is that why? Because Korra just hasn't, like, meditated before? It's kind of unclear.
We also never saw rogue, like, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask, like, because, like, when you have waterbending, like, you see it with Katara and you see it with Northern Water Tribe, you see that, like, waterbending is connected to spirituality, and I'm just wondering why Korra didn't start learning more spirituality earlier, since water's first element she learned.
Because the spirit oasis was tainted, I don't know.
I just don't think that she was taught that, like, there's something more behind the physical being of bending. Like, I think they're like, yeah, there's more, you know? Like, we have awesome moon spirits that gave this to us, but I don't think, like, they really emphasize that that is where it comes from, and it was a gift given by the moon spirit.
Well, I don't think it was necessarily, like, not taught to her, but we didn't remember, Korra is extremely stubborn. It takes her, like,
that's true,
all episodes, yeah, like, definitely, multiple episodes to just learn one thing. It's ridiculous. So that's another thing that, or Aang is more, I guess, open-minded, and then, not necessarily that Korra is closed-minded, she's just so determined all the time that she's right.
She wants to do things her way in her time.
Because she's the Avatar, and they have to deal with it.
yeah, this is interesting. We don't see much of other Avatars learning the spiritual side or anything like that. Or we don't see Korra, like, refusing, like, before she goes to Republic City, just to learn spirituality. So it's kind of hard to pinpoint this real reason, I guess.
We saw Roku struggle with it when he blew up the temple. Wait, am I making this up? Or?
I'm trying to remember.
Oh, it's in the video. I know what she's talking about. Where
he's trying,
like,
the solstice, and he's trying to.
Yeah.
What is he trying to do in that?
He's trying to cheat to get the to achieve the Avatar state. So he, like, uses the Sunstone in the temple, fire temple, to achieve the Avatar state.
Yeah, okay. He's trying to cheat because he, you know, become a fully realized Avatar to control the Avatar state.
Interesting, and we always see Korra as more of a firebender personality.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense. I think another thing to take into account, Sarah was talking about, or Taylor was talking about, either one, the Northern Water Tribe and spirituality, and the Southern, I guess we don't see as much of that, so it might just be that type of thing. We don't really know how much she visited the Northern Water Tribe, if at all.
Well, it's because the Southern, I mean, first off, it's on the other side of the world, and then, I mean, the Southern Water Tribe, I mean, they're really, like, just building it up from the ground after the war. So that could influence,
and there's just not much there in general.
Yeah. I mean, but blessed also, she has, like, family in the Northern, so you never know.
Oh yeah.
Oh that, yeah, really, that's something that they kind of threw in though. So we might see more of that next season, but it doesn't seem like they had that in mind pre season one.
Well, they just thought they were gonna have one season anyway.
Yeah, so it's definitely not something, or maybe it's something they're like, oh, if we get to include this.
I mean, I'm sure they had, like, a pretty good idea in their head, like, of everything they wanted to do, but it's just, they just weren't sure if they were going to get to do it.
I think a lot of what we'll see in season two is just thrown in. I don't, because if they didn't think they would have a season two, then it's not like they're going to be planning all this, so.
I just meant, like, they would at least have, like, some general, I don't, maybe it's just me hoping, or just, this is what I would do. I would have a general idea.
Well, I don't know, I can think of kind of an analog to the way the publishing industry with just books work. Is a lot of times when an author is working on their first-time book, they'll write it as a standalone book, but they'll describe it as standalone but with sequel potential. Where, for example,
had no
potential. Yeah, if any of you've read the Mistborn series, where you can read the first book of that alone, but it also ties in well with the other two books in the series. So its chances are what they were doing with when they were creating Korra was they were thinking, okay, we need this first series to stand on its own, but here we have some cool ideas that we can try later. So I think just anyone familiar with the creative process would imagine that it'd be impossible for them to make Korra without thinking of cool things they'd like to do later.
I think they always had, like, the idea that they would continue after season one, because in the first Comic-Con that Korra had a panel, they accidentally slipped up and it's like, oh, well, that's for the next book. And then, like, somebody, like, called it out, and then they, like, changed the subject really fast. So,
well, by that time, they're probably working on season mm-hmm. two. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've gotten mixed messages from interviews with them, because some of them, it seems like, oh, definitely one season is what we thought. And then others, they're like, we thought that we might maybe do a second season, so we might save this. Anyway, mm-hmm. this is all kind of off topic anyway.
Yes.
but yeah. Other Aang and Korra stuff. I always think of Aang as just so superior morally that it's so frustrating watching Korra.
You can finish Dylan.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just thinking maybe just like, I guess if you want to pull this, but like just how they deal with like their own relationships, like obviously the whole love triangle and Korra just fell apart. I mean, I was not a fan of it, but
I was.
And just like Aang's relations to Katara, I guess.
Well, they just, it's the root of all that is that they're trying to muddle the water. It's like Avatar, everything's so simplistic, and mm-hmm. in its simplicity is being morally sound. Because you have this monogamous, so focused on each other relationship in Avatar, and then it's like, let's bring in a love triangle. And I don't think they intentionally tried to have something, Mako and Korra being morally, I forgot the phrase I always use.
Reprehensible?
Morally reprehensible or something like that. That's a little bit strong, but yeah, that's basically what Makora is. And it's I don't know how much that was intended, but it's just they're trying to change the... give it more depth, but by giving it more depth, they kind of ruin it.
Well, it goes back to how Korra is just sucks at social interaction. I mean, she talks yeah. to she talks to Iki and Jinora, and I love Jinora and I love Iki, but they have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah, it's she's isolated, and then she's getting advice from these two other isolated people. And
then, I'm sorry, Pima, that was terrible. I mean, we don't know the entire story, but that's still not good either. So, Korra really doesn't have anything good to go on except Aang and Katara, but we're never going to have anything like Aang and Katara, because that was beautiful, and it shouldn't be. So,
exactly. The most the most interesting way to look at Makora is two damaged people brought up in who are socially awkward and don't know the consequences of their actions. But that's not the way it's presented.
It's not that bad.
It's not like they're not saying they murdered anyone, but still, like...
but you can also go back to the... Oh, sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Well, just the cultural difference, which also, like, if you look at even just the end of Avatar Last Airbender and then the episodes of Korra, just the culture surrounding the characters, it's so different.
Definitely.
And then also... What? Sorry.
Oh, I just said definitely. Go ahead.
It encourages the encourages. I don't even know what I'm saying anymore. How it's part of like their differences in the characters, especially, and not just because Korra was raised in her little compound, but just when she comes to the city, the culture shock, and then like what she sees is normal, and she actually tries to fit in.
Yeah.
So just how it goes back to, because their messed up relationship goes back to, and clearly things are crazy in the city, because we had the Pima and Tenzin and Lin triangle, just crazy.
We go from the pristine world of Avatar into this decaying, modernized world of Korra.
It's the smog, that's what it is. Yeah. That's why Korra's so messed up. The smog. What's going on right now? Yeah. Listen, making everyone crazy in the head.
Other thoughts about what we're talking about or Aang and Korra in general? No other thoughts. Okay. So let's, I guess, Aang or Korra, give me an answer. Aang or in
go
general.
Around, or are we just gonna start
I don't want to judge, because I mean, we've only seen one season of Korra, and we've seen 60 episodes of Aang.
Well, let's be unfair and then judge it now. Okay.
Wait, are we talking about Korra, them as people, them in a battle, or
whatever
like,
you
just in
not
general?
Not in a battle, but whatever you want to, however you want to deem this question. Aang for me.
Yeah, it's Aang.
Any Korra people?
I mean,
I think Haley's stuck. I don't think she doesn't know.
So conflicted. I think, like, Aang is the better person, and overall a more mature person, but I don't know.
But you love Korra.
I love Korra. I don't like Aang very much.
That's just because you're a Zatarian. It just
tells that doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean anything.
Okay, well, like you don't like Mako because of... Okay. I'm just saying... Okay. More likely to hate Aang because you're a Zatarian. That's just
no. I mean, I don't like Makora, yet I still like Korra. Like
I love Makora.
That's that doesn't you don't like Makora, but you still like that makes sense.
Well, it was all about Bora, man. It was all about the Bora.
Bora should have happened.
Okay, now we're way off topic.
Yeah, we're way off.
I like Aang. Aang's the best.
Aang is the best. In conclusion, Aang is the best.
False.
I've been your main host, Dylan. Many hosts have been. Derek, Kaylee, Sarah, Colin, Delaney. Dongfeng is owned by Jake. I produce that at the podcast. Any final thoughts on what should we end on?
Aang is awesome. And
Bora is better.
Well.
Hmm.
Say Aang or Korra, I guess, if you want to.
Is it just going to turn out to be Aorobarabara?
That's exactly what, except Haley will be the only one saying Korra, so.
Ooh.
Sad. Okay. What's one, two, three, Aang.
Korra.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for dongbufang.net. If you want extensive in-depth discussion on Korra from longtime knowledgeable fans of Avatar and longtime fandom members, then this is the podcast for you. I am your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by mini-host, Philip.
Hello.
Colin.
Hello.
And Derek.
Hey.
Today, this is a mini-cast where we discuss a single Avatar Korra topic for a brief time. Today we will be discussing Doctor Who and comparisons between Doctor Who and Avatar. And I think there are a lot of them, which is why I want to do this. And also I'm watching Doctor Who right now. And I'm really excited about it, so... It's really good. Anyway, but yeah, there are many comparisons to be made. I guess we're not going to talk about like too many specifics on Doctor Who, so it's not really like we'll spoil anything. There's this one episode in particular I want to compare that we might spoil some stuff from, but it's not really that consequential of an episode anyway. But yeah, really, I think you could listen to this even if you're in the middle of Doctor Who. Like, I'm not completely caught up yet. I'm in season 6 right now, or series 6. But yeah, and if you don't watch Doctor Who, I don't know if you'll how much you'll get out of it, but we'll still be, like, comparing it to Avatar, so stuff like that, yeah. Email us at dylan@dongbufang.net, post on the forums at dongbufang.net/forums. So yeah, I am, like I said, I'm in series 6 of Doctor Who. Let's go, when you guys started watching Doctor Who and where are you right now? Philip.
I've watched all of the new series up to series 7. I haven't watched any of the old stuff, but, I started watching, I want to say, 3 or 4 years ago.
Nice. And how big of a fan? Pretty big fan?
Yeah, I watch every episode, like, an hour after it comes out, or when it comes out.
Nice. Colin, how about you?
Well, I wouldn't define myself as a Whovian, per se. But, I mean, I only got into it because, like, well, I'm not really into it, but it's just my whole family's obsessed with it, so I watch, I'm pretty much up to date now, but, yeah.
Okay. And Derek?
Yeah, I just started watching about 3 months ago, and I've just started season 5.
Okay. Yeah, and I guess I should say I only started, like, a month ago, so yeah. Been rapidly going through the series. Anyway, there's, I guess, specifically the comparisons I want to draw to are between Aang and the Doctor. Because I think if you look at Korra, there's a lot less comparisons to be made, but specifically Aang and the Doctor are extremely similar figures.
Yeah, I think, I kind of think that the existence of Korra helps make the parallel. Because, I mean, you got the Doctor's regenerations. He's still the same person, but he takes on a new face. While with Aang and the Avatar, you have something very similar, but at too less of a degree, where they're a completely different person, but they're still sort of the same person, but not to the extent as Doctor Who, so...
Yeah. It definitely seems in Doctor Who they're more of the same... It's more of, this is the same person. Like, the Doctor... clearly the same person. In Avatar, it's just more of the spirit regenerating.
But they just go like straight one to the other. Whereas in Avatar, you have like the short ambiguous period where they're like a little kid and nobody knows.
That's true. That's another thing. And you have to test for who it is. But whereas in Doctor Who, it's like it's the same guy. Originally, I thought, I guess, from the beginning, okay, a little bit of spoilers here, but it's very general. When David Tennant regenerated, it was more of like this was a new person. Whereas from Christopher Eccleston to David Tennant, I thought it was more of like, oh, okay, this isn't a big deal. I guess it was treated as a bigger deal, so maybe it's the comparison's better going from Tennant to Matt Smith.
Yeah, I think part of that just had to do with the fact that David Tennant had like 3 seasons behind his belt, while Christopher Eccleston had only done 1 season, so they probably, by the time David Tennant regenerated, they were probably thinking, okay, they've been with him for 3 years, we're going to really, really pull all the plugs out on the tear ducts for this regeneration, just to really milk it for all it's worth.
Yeah, I think it was more of a circumstance with fans being really attached to him than maybe the mythology, but it's just the mythology presented in a different way, so it's interesting. Because it was David Tennant said, I don't want to go, and it's like, I don't know, he's just the same person, so I don't know how much sense that makes, but yeah.
Yeah, I think I could have sworn that Christopher Eccleston also had a similar line as that, but when I actually watched it again, I don't recall seeing that. So I might have just been getting confused with the two, but they definitely did play the, yeah, he's going to die a lot more with that regeneration.
Yeah. I think, but like for me, even beyond the very obvious regeneration thing, it's just there's so much else to compare them to. Really, to begin with, the they both are kind of protectors of the Earth. I think that's a very good way to think about it. Because Aang's main job, I wouldn't say, is to protect the people like the Doctor's is. Well, he kind of puts that job on himself. It's more of he's like a bridge, but he ends up just protecting everyone a lot. And the Doctor, it's not his job, but that's what he does.
Yeah. He's actually not supposed to do it, but he does it anyway.
Yeah, and they're very similar peaceful figures.
I would argue their inner reasoning kind of is different, though, because Aang is like, I'm the Avatar, I'm an air nomad, everything I do is about peace. But the Doctor is very much conflicted on the inside. He thinks himself to be a very terrible person.
Okay, their upbringings. Let's get into that, because I think they may stem from that. What I've seen so far of the Time Lords, and granted, I've only watched the new series and only up to 6. They're not air nomadic. Especially probably the.
Have
new
you gotten to the special with the Master yet? That. Yeah, there's a lot of
the end of time. Yeah, so it seems like they only become like less peaceful because of the time war.
Yeah, from what the Doctor said in that was when he found out that the Time Lords found out their plot. He sort of like was saying about how they used to be. He remembered the Time Lords of old and how they were benevolent then, but then they became a warring kind of people. And I've always, even though I don't know, I kind of see them as being fairly analogous to the Air Nomads, because from what I've seen so far, there was a bit of a detachment from the other species of the universe, the way the Air Nomads were detached from the rest of the world. And it's kind of like the Time Lords are the Air Nomads gone bad kind of thing, is the way I kind of look at the comparison between the two.
That's especially like the warring Time Lords, I'd say. I think there's a fundamental difference, even though we haven't seen too much of the Time Lords. It's like in the name, Time Lord, I think they see themselves as controlling of the universe, as maybe superior to all other species. Go ahead.
Because like they can go through like time, space, just like easy as a click of a button.
Yeah, well, not even just factually, though, just how they perceive themselves is probably more important here. And I think even the Doctor, who's like good and peaceful, he still sees himself, I think, as superior. Not necessarily life, like the importance of life, but just in terms of inherent superiority.
Yeah. Also, in because I mean, usually a lot of times people are saying, "Why? How do you know this?" Etc. Is like because I'm clever, kind of thing. And also, you guys have seen The Waters of Mars, sort of like with the end of that one, where it just comes to realization, "Hey, wait a minute, I can do what I want," kind of thing. So it definitely has that same attitude. He doesn't have it for very long, but he does fall prey to that.
That's true. That was a very different episode.
But I wouldn't discount it to the point where he's like, I'm better than everyone, because no spoilers, but there's a quote from a more recent episode where he says, in all of 900 years I've never met anyone who wasn't important.
I think I've seen that one, so it must be somewhat close to where I am. But he doesn't treat it as such, but I just general sense of him being like smarter, he still realizes that. But I guess to finish the
comparison, he thinks he's very clever.
Yeah, to finish the comparison, the Air Nomads, I don't think have any sense of superiority over anyone. Like, and they just have a monastic sort of thing about their culture. They respect all life, and they're one with like the world and stuff like that. So I think that's a pretty stark difference.
Yeah, and even though we haven't seen that much of them, and this is just conjecture, I'd imagine that it wouldn't be impossible for there to have been Air Nomads who thought themselves superior because of how detached and nonviolent they were. Kind of like it's the whole mindset of, yes, we're the peaceful ones, et cetera, everyone else is warring or whatnot. So, I mean, it's never shown in the show, but I can imagine that at some point there was an Air Nomad that might have thought like that.
Okay, that just makes me want a version of the Master in Avatar, who's like an Air Nomad who just goes to war with the Avatar. I guess Aang specifically. That'd be amazing.
That fanfic, I don't know if it's been written, but it should be.
It should be written, yes. let's see, what else do I have on this list? They're both less so for Aang, but they're like not human in a certain way. Mm. They're like a spirit. Aang's like a spirit incarnate, and obviously the Doctor is inherently not human.
I think the not human thing, like less literally but more figuratively, applies to Aang because he's also an Air Nomad who no one's seen in 100 years. So I think that's something that like he's something no one's seen before. Not necessarily like he's not human, but he's rare.
That's true. Kind of. Yeah, that's very true.
Like that's something we don't see with Korra because it's Water Tribe. That's not that special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we also have a bit of a similar thing, not so much in classic Doctor Who, but definitely in the new Doctor Who that we've all watched, is that the Doctor's the last of the Time Lord, or at least one of the last, while Aang is the last of the Air Nomads. So there's a bit of that, maybe not necessarily not human, but that there is that element of separation between Aang and the Doctor and the rest of their respective supportive cast.
That's one theme that comes up, like not often, but every once in a while with the Doctors, that the realization that he is the last of his species.
That's very true.
Or like the last of his kind.
Yeah.
And Aang kind of has that same thought.
Yeah, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Companions, Aang kind of has this posse. And same for kind of every Avatar. I think the concepts of Avatar and Time Lord just in general are very similar. This reincarnating figure who travels around with people.
Yeah, though I think, I don't know if the Companions thing is as close as the others would be, because, I don't know if the other Avatars would have had that. And he didn't swap out, like, he had his central group of friends, and he added more into the group. Mm. Obviously, but people never really left the group.
Well, oh, man, I'm just kind of imagining what Avatar would have been like if they'd done with Aang's companions what they do with some of the Doctor's companions, and that would have been a completely different show.
A lot of times the companions cycle with the Doctor though, which would be like a new Avatar being born. Like, it's not. Yeah. I mean, obviously, Tennant has multiple companions though.
It does actually kind of work, because although companions come and go, they do have the same basic core of companions between, Christopher Eccleston and David Tennant. They keep the same general companions, and then with Matt Smith, it's a completely new cast. And from what I've seen and understand, none of the David Tennant companions really come back. And so if I remember correctly,
all of David Tennant's companions have had something happen to them that means they aren't around anymore.
Yeah, and if you compare the two, it's kind of like you've got the David Tennant companions and the Matt Smith companions. At the same time, you've got the Aang companions and the Korra companions.
And I think it's a good comparison, that because it's like a new showrunner between with the Matt Smith Doctor. And that's like, I guess there's not a new showrunner for Korra, but it's definitely a new show.
Yeah.
Yeah. But inherently, I guess the companion situation is different. And the reason for the companions, I'd say, is different too. It's not like the Avatar is inherently lonely like the Doctor is, which is one of the big themes of Doctor Who.
Yeah, the fact that Aang can actually talk to his past lives probably means that he's the least lonely person ever.
Well, I mean, the Doctor has his past regenerations, but that's not quite the same thing. And also, one theme with the Doctor has been that he needs the companions to keep him, rational, keep him from, getting out of hand.
Yeah, hence why we get episodes like The Waters of Mars.
Or, I don't know if you've seen Turn Left, but that explores...
Yeah,
what would happen if one of his companions had never met him and everything goes terribly wrong?
Yeah, well...
Oh, yeah, that was such a depressing episode.
That's a really good one. That's more of a... It's more of a theme with Donna than I think the other companions. Donna keeps him moral, is one of the big things with her.
Yeah, yeah, I definitely... Yeah, I think... Also, I forgot what I was going to say. Someone else talk.
I guess... Okay, next thing I have on my list is balance. Which I think is a very big symbol in both shows. In Doctor Who, balance of time is such an important thing. And I think with all kind of time travel.
Yeah, I can't create a paradox. And originally it was the fixed points in time, but with the Waters of Mars, he's like, nope, forget that.
no fixed points, thing. Yeah.
Yeah, but with the ending of that episode, it was very much, even if a Time Lord can't change the fixed moments in time, he can change them in minor ways, but the really big thing... doesn't actually change. It just, the way it happens changes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't change.
It's still open-ended whether that's actually a fixed point or whether it was just because of the circumstances, but still. It's the balance of time, and also just the keeping balance on the Earth. The Doctor does that a lot, and obviously Avatar is all about balance. Balance, balance, balance.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. And also, it's kind of interesting with the Doctor Who, they have an official, the Shadow Proclamation, where it's basically don't mess with a level 5 planet and so on. And while at the same time it's Aang feels more official in his universe, it's everyone accepts him as an authority while the Doctor is more of a free agent. And he more...
And the Doctor's only kind of sort of public.
Yeah.
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 They're the agencies that know about him, but he doesn't go on the news and say, hey, I'm the Doctor, I'm here to save your planet, and all that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing up the Shadow Proclamation, I think that's I have a difference now between the Doctor and Avatar. Shadow Proclamation, the one thing I always notice is protects level 5 planets. And that's something always the Doctor says. But we don't see too much of the Doctor protecting, let's say, non-intelligent life. Which is definitely a difference with Aang, who respects all life and is vegetarian and, even the smallest, I forgot what the quote is.
There was that one episode in season 1 with the aliens that transformed the pig to make the humans think that's the alien. And then when the soldiers shoot the pig, the humanoid pig, then Christopher Eccleston does have that one moment where he gets really upset at them for killing it. So in that instant, I can't think of any others. He does have sort of a similar attitude of all life is worth protecting. It's just not focused on as much.
That's a good point. I forgot about that. I think it's kind of unclear whether the Doctor is a vegetarian or not. I read that one of the old Doctors became at some point, but I don't. I'd say the current ones probably aren't.
One thing is Aang's style is more forgiveness and you did something bad, but I'm going to forgive you. But the Doctor's is, especially Tennant's, is you did something bad and now you are going to suffer so much.
Oh, especially the one with, what was it, the one where he forgot
the aliens were the family? He was in the watch or whatever, and so he, that was so dark.
Well, so, I think it's he tries. He always gives them this this choice.
Yeah.
So that's like every time. It's not really analogous situations because he has to do something, take action in order to prevent it. But he really tries to not take the action. It's just differences in Avatar, I think, being and also I think the Avatar is much more powerful, so it's really easier for him to subdue instead of destroy like David Tennant has to a Time Lord.
The Doctor's power is very it's kind of vague at times, I've found, where it's like, yes, he can travel through time, but he needs a machine for that. He's not super strong. He's actually about probably human strength. But there was one scene, a very early season, one scene where, I don't know if this ever came back, it hasn't in the stuff that I've watched, where Christopher Eccleston basically does something, like he's trying to get through these swinging blades or something like that, and he basically does something to time that lets him get through, but I don't think that's ever brought up again, so whether he can actually do that on his own, I don't think is ever addressed, so Aang is definitely more powerful.
Yeah, the Doctor's power comes from, like, the ability to control time, also to the machine, the technology he has. Other than that, though, it's only his.
Yeah, the Gallifreyans, aside from regeneration, aren't any particularly special race.
Yeah, it's only the intelligence is the big thing. And that's, you always see the Doctor just spending so much time thinking of the plan that'll do it. But it's not like the inherent power of the Avatar.
Yeah, definitely. And also, with Aang, it's kind of like his, I don't know, I'd almost want to say his power comes from, basically breaking the law, the basic laws that govern bending, where it's, the basic law, you can only have one type, but with him, he breaks it, while with the Doctor, he's still bound by the laws of time, no matter what he may say otherwise. So it's like always, if it's a fixed moment, there's nothing he can do, even when he tries, kind of thing.
And I would say Aang's probably bound by, the spirits. I guess he can't, ruin the balance of the spirits. That was more of, the Northern Water Tribe thing. It's not that that's really ever came up all that much, though.
Yeah, not really. And it's also there's also the difference of the audience, where Doctor Who is aimed at a bit of an older audience, so the elements, the themes that they address do go a little bit deeper than Avatar's. Avatar is still really deep for for the audience that it's aimed at, but it does still not go quite as deep as it could have.
It's interesting because they're both kind of just at their core shows that are... So I think that Doctor Who is a show for adults that has a children audience, and Avatar is a show for kids that has an adult audience. So I guess it's kind of swing like that, but they're both these very dual shows, I'd say.
Yeah, not only that, but Doctor Who also has a much longer runtime per episode, so they're not constrained by the limits of what animation can do in a given amount of time.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and the
15-minute runtime definitely allows a lot more than the 22-minute runtime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, getting back to the vegetarian thing, I just remembered, at the beginning, in episode 1 of season 5, Matt Smith tries bacon. He doesn't like it, but still the fact that he tried bacon.
Oh, that's true.
He also eats fish fingers and custard.
Yeah, fish.
So we know he's not vegan vegetarian. He might not like meat in his Matt Smith form, but at least Christopher Eccleston or David Tennant or one of the previous ones had eaten bacon.
Doctors aren't, current doctors I don't think are vegetarians, but I did read something that one of the old ones tried to or something. Next thing is Symbol of Hope. The Doctor, not as much for the world, although he kind of becomes that as the world gets more exposed to him. But definitely to his companions, you always see these shots of people like, where's the Doctor? And like hoping and stuff like that. And like that's
more a symbol of hope to like his companions and his friends than he is to the world in general.
Which is kind of interesting.
Mostly because the world doesn't really know about him, but
at some point you'd think the world would, everyone in the world will know about the Doctor, since he gets increased exposure out of like every alien event. So the comparison between them both being the last of their kind, and they both were killed off in these wars, So I guess, does that mean that the Fire Nation are the Daleks? Like, cause,
I mean, that's what I was saying. Like, okay, like throughout the whole, like each Doctor, sure, you have like episodes where you like help people out, just like an Avatar. Like Aang always, like he always had time to help like people out, but it was always like between the Daleks. Like you can say like an Akora, Amon, the Daleks, but and Fire Nation, the Daleks, but. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if it fits, though, because the Daleks are, like, basically always evil, but the Fire Nation is, like, one guy is making them evil, but they it kind of redeems itself with a new Fire Lord.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Avatar is maybe more morally ambiguous than Doctor Who, and Doctor Who's just inherently not morally ambiguous because the Daleks are created to be evil.
Yeah, and they only ever address moral ambiguity in two episodes that I've seen. There was the first one in season one where we see the one Dalek for the first time. And then there was the one with the Dalek human hybrid in season three.
Seven.
Season
three, there's the Dalek human Dalek.
Yeah, with the the things coming off his face.
Yeah,
that's
my favorite episode.
Ugh.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah,
let's get into a specific one I want to talk about because we're getting long. I noticed this as I was watching this episode, and I couldn't think of anything else the entire time I was watching. The Doctor's Daughter, it's an episode in... do I have this up here? It's season three or four. Three, I think.
It's four. Four. Donna's in there. Yeah, it's four.
Six episode, fourth series.
Oh, yeah, Donna. Okay, Martha comes back in... Okay, yeah, in this one. But, yeah, it's the same plot as The Great Divide, which is hilarious, but... So...
That, and they both suck.
This episode, I think, is okay, but more because I like the Georgia Muffet character a lot, who's the daughter. The daughter is the one part which I don't see. There's no analogous thing to in The Great Divide. But in general, there's this this conflict between two factions that have always warred forever. This is in both these episodes. And then one companion stuck with one of them, and the other group is stuck with another one, and they have to go meet together. And then it's up to the Doctor or the Avatar to resolve it. And that's basically the plot of The Great Divide in this one. There's no inherent slobbiness versus cleanliness like you see in The Great Divide and in the Doctor Who episode, but it's still very similar.
Very similar themes.
Yeah. And the interesting part is, the most important part of the episode is the way this conflict is resolved. And I would say the Doctor Who way it's resolved is more entertaining, but maybe less satisfying, because he doesn't do anything. It's just this is how it was. I don't really want to spoil the episode, but it's like the conflict was null, and it's just they shouldn't have been fighting in the first place. Whereas in Avatar, Aang actually does something to end the conflict. That conflict was real, but Aang uses his Avatar peace powers, even if it's in a really dumb way, in order to have a conflict.
Yeah, surprisingly enough, I'm going to say something good about The Great Divide, but the reason for the conflict is explained better in their 20 minutes versus the 50 minutes that the Doctor's Daughter has, which is kind of weird, actually.
Yeah, the one in the Doctor's Daughter was kind of weird.
Yeah, it was like a power vacuum. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it's a very quick resolution, yeah.
Yeah, and also the problem with that one is that the way they explain the conflict also kind of cheapens the resolution at the end, because at the same time you're like, okay, if these two species started fighting because of a power vacuum, then that suggests that there was like tension before, and if they don't have that one man to keep them from, or woman, or whoever it was, to keep them from descending into conflict, then you kind of wonder, okay, how would they be able to continue having peace after the peace is established at the end? So the Avatar, even though the whole, oh, I knew these guys, oh wait, no I didn't, I lied, was kind of stupid in The Great Divide, it also was a more lasting solution, I felt.
Yeah.
It was a very silly resolution, but it worked, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's all I have for this. Other comparisons, contrasts you guys have found that we haven't mentioned yet?
Well, they're both, I don't know, they both appeal to more or less the same audience, I've kind of found. It's kind of like, it's a very both very nerdy shows. So
both have big online followings, yeah.
One I just thought of is they both have a very close relationship with their, like, well, the Doctor with the TARDIS and Appa. And
oh, Aang. Nice. That is a very good one. But I really think these are just similarly derived shows. I'm not sure how it happened, but there's just all of these similarities. Not like the episode-specific one, but just Avatar The Last Airbender, the concept, and the Doctor's concept, they're so similar. You wonder if it was influenced by Doctor Who, if Avatar was. Because I don't think I've ever heard that before.
It's not. I don't think it was ever actually specifically said, but it's certainly not impossible.
So it's also not like an idea that's inherently original to Doctor Who either. I mean, like a savior of Earth who's like special.
Yeah. Well, you usually find that concept.
It necessarily came from Doctor Who, but I think they have so many of those elements in common that it's very uncanny.
Yeah, it seems to me that it's very much a combination of the Christ figure, the prophet figure, slash the hero's journey monomyth kind of idea, where it's something that's pretty much prevalent in pretty much all cultures, that it's not surprising that we would have the savior type figure, main hero, who is like their job to bring balance to the world, universe, whichever.
Nice. Yeah, so at the end it just goes back to tropes and to all these things you see as early as like Mesopotamia and I forgot what it's called, the Gilgamesh.
Yeah, Gilgamesh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nice. Okay, I think it's a good way to wrap it up.
Okay.
So yeah, if you guys have comparisons, post on the forums, and also feel free to post on there talking about Doctor Who, because I'm totally into it right now, and we should create a thread on the forums. But yeah. I've been your main host, Dylan. Mini hosts have been Colin, Derek, Phillip, Jake Owens, Dongufang. I produce that podcast. What do you guys want to end on?
Allons-y.
No, yeah, oh, no.
Yes.
Exterminate. No.
Oh.
the catchphrase I'm on right now is Geronimo. That's the one I'm on. That's Geronimo is like the most forced catchphrase though, like with New Doctor.
Mm.
Anyway, I don't know. End on something Doctor Who-y.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Exactly. One, two, three. Geronimo. Say something, Doctor Who-y.
Exterminate.
Delete.
Delete, exterminate, yes. Delete.